Morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Zorislav Lederman. I represent the estate of Mr. Guled, the young man who was shot and killed in this case. And as the Court is aware, we're here to ask the Court to reverse the dismissal of this lawsuit and send it back for further proceedings. So this case involves kind of two themes. We have the state probate law, which is a play, and also the federal law with respect to survival of 1983 causes of action. And both of those are addressed in the party's briefing. I'd like to talk today, starting with the state law issues, and hopefully I'll get to some of the federal issues as well. So I think one critical issue that isn't made clear in the city's briefing, and also a mistake the district court made, is the failure to recognize that when a person dies under Minnesota state law, two legal events happen. Two things happen. Number one, we have the creation of the estate. So an estate is created, an estate that belongs to the person who died. Number two,
that requires legal action, doesn't it, to initiate that process?
Yes, Your Honor, that requires legal action for somebody to be appointed to represent the estate. The second thing that happens under Minnesota state law is possibly a cause of action arises for what's called the heirs and next of kin. This is a totally separate entity from the estate, and the estate and the heirs and next of kin have different interests, and they can pursue different causes of action. The estate has claims that belong to the person who died, to the decedent. The heirs and next of kin under the wrongful death statute, they have a new cause of action for harm and damages that they personally suffered as a result of the death of the decedent. And again, as I mentioned earlier, both the city and the district court make the mistake of failing to recognize that these are two separate entities with two separate rights that can both be pursued. Both of these entities could be named in a police shooting case depending on what sorts of claims are being pursued and depending on the timing of when the lawsuit is filed. The wrongful death statute, which gives rights to the next of kin, has a three-year limitation period. And so once that three-year limitation period expires, there is essentially nothing left for the next of kin to recover. They cannot pursue any claims because the limitation period is over. The estate does have a claim for a period of 6 years, and the difference is that the estate has claims for all damages that survive a decedent's death. The next of kin can only recover damages that they personally suffered as a result of the death of the person who died. And so, Minnesota law makes clear.
Can the same individuals represent both the estate and the next of kin?
You're asking around whether the same individuals could represent both?
Yes.
Potentially they could, but there could also be a conflict of interest where both cannot represent both the estate and the next of kin.
I mean, is there a direct prohibition? If under circumstances it could be prohibited, but is it? Do you have any indication of whether it's common?
I don't know, Your Honor, whether it's common. I have, to be honest, barely any experience in probate law. This isn't something that I typically handle. Theoretically, the same person could represent both the next of kin and the estate. But what's important to understand here is that the next of kin do not necessarily recover the damages that belong to the estate, and that's something else that the district court failed to recognize. If an estate opens up probate proceedings, let's say the estate recovers money in this case, two things could happen. Number one, if the person who died, the decedent, Mr. Goulet, had a will — he doesn't in this case, but if he had a will, whatever money is recovered in this case will be distributed pursuant to his will. So if he had a will that says that he donates all of his proceeds to a local law library, neither the heirs or the next of kin, they wouldn't get anything, because everything would go to the entity that he designated in his will. The second issue that's important is creditors can go after the estate. Creditors under Minnesota state law cannot go after the money that's awarded to the heirs and next of kin, and that makes sense because that money is given to them for the harm that they personally suffered from the loss of their loved one. Creditors can attack the estate, and so for this reason, just because we have people who could potentially recover this money both as estate beneficiaries and as heirs and next of kin, that doesn't always work that way under Minnesota state law, and potentially the heirs and next of kin would get nothing from the estate. The next thing that's important to consider is who's the plaintiff here, and what is the plaintiff trying to recover? The only plaintiff that is named in this lawsuit is the estate of Mr. Goulet. The heirs and next of kin are not named as plaintiffs. They could be if they pursued this case within 3 years, and that did happen in earlier litigation that's discussed in the briefing. But in this lawsuit, where it is today, the estate is the only plaintiff.
Was it the same plaintiff in the first case as the plaintiff in this case?
Well, the named party is the estate. That was never named earlier, but the person representing the decedent is the same. That's Mr. Abdi. Mr. Abdi was at one point appointed as a trustee, then the trustee status was revoked. Then he was appointed as the estate representative.
And that's the special administrator?
That's a special administrator, correct, Your Honor. And so,
is a claim on behalf of Mr. Goulet one that survives, that the estate could bring, sue or be sued on? What are some examples of those kinds of actions that the personal representative can, isn't that the language?
Yes.
Sue and be sued in the courts?
Sure. Under Minnesota state law, the cause of action that remains under 1983 in this case would not survive, and the estate could not bring that cause of action. Examples of causes of action that could be brought, breach of contract, for example. My understanding is that under Minnesota probate law, the estate could sue for breach of contract. The estate could be sued for breach of contract.
That would have survived the death of Mr. Goulet.
My understanding is that it would. Property disputes about residences or businesses that the decedent owned. These are things that could survive, and the estate could pursue those claims, and the estate could be sued with regards to those claims. But if we take the only claim that's being pursued here, pre-death pain and suffering, all we're seeking here is that short period of time when Mr. Goulet was shot until the point of time that he died. There was a short period where he was alive and he was suffering pain and emotional distress.
And under Minnesota law, those claims abate at the death of the injured party. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And that's very clear that under Minnesota state law, the very limited damages that we are seeking in this case, that they abate at the moment that Mr. Goulet died. And so,
is it your position that either someone who's been appointed a trustee or someone who's a special administrator or personal representative should be able to bring this federal suit?
Our position, Your Honor, is kind of twofold. First of all, this court doesn't have to decide what rights a trustee has in lawsuits such as this. We don't have a trustee in this case. We only have the estate representative. And so even though this court could decide this question, it doesn't have to. That's not a question this court has to answer. To answer your question, Judge Kelly, my position, my understanding of the law is that for the claims that are pursued here, only an estate representative can bring those claims. And that's because under Minnesota state law, the statutes that we said in our briefing, actually 573.01, the survival statute, that statute itself says that if any claim is to survive, that survives the personal representative. That's a language that's used in the survival statute. Then if we look to the probate code also says that the personal representative of the estate has the right and the obligation to pursue any claims that do survive the decedent's death, and those survive to the estate. And so my position from my research and what I've been able to learn about this process is that potentially, in a police lawsuit where a person is shot, actually both the estate and the heirs and next of kin can be named as plaintiffs, but they'd be pursuing two separate causes of action. The heirs and next of kin are named to recover damages that they personally suffered, and then the estate is named to recover damages suffered by the decedent. And again, these are two separate things that could happen in the same lawsuit.
So what enables the claims that you represent for the as a special representative or administrator, what enables those claims to survive the death of the injured party?
Well, the Minnesota law does not allow survival of those claims. What allows those claims to survive is federal law, 1983 and 1988.
Well, that's where we are in this case.
Yes.
I want you to give me your best authority that that this court is required to reverse.
Sure. So, Your Honor, I think that the place to start with regards to what to do with those claims is to look to the Robertson case. Robertson case sets out precisely the situation that we are dealing with here. That case, actually, the facts of that case involved an individual who died from unrelated causes. But Robertson says that if you have a case where a person does die as a result of a constitutional violation, two factors that the court has to consider. Number one is deterrence, and number two is compensation. And if state law does not provide for both of those to be accomplished, the federal judiciary is required to allow for those claims to proceed. And so our position is that federal law permits Mr. Gulet's claims to go forward. This court's decision, Andrews versus Neer, actually discusses the precise issues that we are dealing with here. In my supplemental authority letter that I filed approximately a month ago, I provide the court with three other federal circuit cases. We have Chaudhry versus City of Los Angeles. That's a Ninth Circuit case. We have Berry versus City of Muskogee, Tenth Circuit case, and Bass versus Wallenstein, Seventh Circuit case. All three of these cases say the precise same thing, that if state law prohibits the decedent to recover pre-death pain and suffering damages, federal law has to step in and allow somebody to be able to pursue those claims on behalf of the decedent.
So looking to state law for both standing and damages, because the district court here said that those were two distinct inquiries.
Yes.
And you disagree with that?
Absolutely, Ryan. We disagree with the idea of the district court that the Minnesota state law provides sufficient deterrent and compensation to be able to pursue these claims. And the cases that I just cited actually speak to that. Those cases dealt with very similar statutes that we have here, and those cases decided that having this idea that the heirs and next of kin can recover some very limited compensation that does not include compensation for pain and suffering, that does not accomplish the deterrence and the compensation effects that 1983 seeks to accomplish.
Counsel, you have a couple minutes left.
Yes, I'll reserve that for rebuttal. Thank you.
All right. Ms. McLaren?
May it please the court. Plaintiff appellant is asking this court to set aside state law essentially to escape a predicament of his own making in this situation. Minnesota state law routinely has permitted trustees appointed to represent the heirs and next of kin to pursue Section 1983 claims in both situations where the Section 1983 claim related to a death and in situations where it related to tort claims that would otherwise be governed under the survival statute. Minnesota state law appoints a trustee for the heirs and next of kin for both wrongful death and survival type claims. That is different than in some of the states from other circuits that plaintiff's counsel has referred to. We have cited numerous cases at page 26 of our brief, including four in front of this court, in which a trustee was pursuing Section 1983 claims, in those cases related to a death. And we have also included jury instructions from a case in front of the district court in Minnesota under which a trustee appointed under Minnesota state law, the jury was instructed that that trustee could recover damages for pre-death pain and suffering, the exact type of damages sought to be recovered in this case. The plaintiff here himself attempted twice before to pursue these claims as a trustee, once when he during the period when he was a duly appointed trustee, and then once afterward, prior to the realization that that.
Well, if the method he seeks to use now is lawful and required, it wouldn't matter whether he could have done it sooner or didn't do it right sooner, would it?
Absolutely, that is correct, Your Honor. However, Minnesota state law is clear under Section 573 that 573.01 that a cause of action arising out of an injury to the person dies with the person except as provided in 573.02. And that is 573.02 is the provision that relates to the trustee. So Minnesota law is clear that the trustee is the only person who is permitted under state law to pursue these claims. And I don't really hear plaintiff arguing differently. What I hear plaintiff arguing is that he believes that these claims just abated and can no longer be pursued, and that all the prior cases in front of this court and at the District of Minnesota finding a trustee could pursue those claims were in error, and that this court, under Robertson, should disregard Minnesota state law and create its own federal common law for cases related to that would arise out of Minnesota. And under Section 1988, this court is first required to look to state law, except to this extent it finds it inconsistent with federal law. Here, this court has previously never found it to be inconsistent. And two cases in the District of Minnesota that directly address the issue also declined to find it inconsistent and found that Section 1983 claims could only be pursued through the trustee. Now, also, I don't know that plaintiff has directly said this, but I want to be clear. The trustee can still be appointed. The plaintiff is correct that the statute of limitations has expired for a wrongful death action. However, Minnesota precedent makes clear that that does not bar the appointment of a trustee. This makes sense because you could also have a survival claim apart from a wrongful death claim under Section 573.02 Subdivision 2 that could still be pursued. You could have a longer statute of limitations. And in fact, in the Ortiz versus Govenda case out of the Supreme Court of Minnesota that was cited in our materials, the court there noted that even after the expiration of the wrongful death statute, the district court had appointed a trustee.
And that trustee then, in your view, could bring the Section 1983 claim.
Absolutely, assuming that the statute of limitations for Section 1983 had not yet expired.
And your position is that the special administrator simply has no powers that are similar to the trustee in terms of these kinds of claims.
I think that is the only fair reading of 573, and I think the parties are actually in agreement on that because the plaintiff is saying that these claims abated. So this court, as part of its creation of federal common law, should look to Minnesota state law to the special administrator and basically adopt that type of framework for these types of cases going forward is how I understand plaintiff's argument.
And so why not? Why not look to the special administrator as well as the trustee under state law?
Well, I don't believe I think in order to do that, the court would have to find that the trustee was not a sufficient basis because Section 1988 says this court has to look to state law and only under Robertson if it finds it inconsistent with the Constitution or federal law can it create its own federal common law and I suppose maybe adopt in part of the special administrator framework under Minnesota state law. So I don't think we can have a both and here. Under Robertson and Section 1988, this court does not have the discretion to create additional avenues to standing in the absence of finding state law inconsistent with federal law. And this really gets to the crux of plaintiff's argument because as this court has previously recognized, as the District of Minnesota has previously recognized, standing and damages are two separate inquiries under this area of the law. He has cited all of the cases he has cited, they do not involve changing the party pursuing the claim. Some of the cases permit trim back the amount of damages that party may pursue under Section 1983. Some cases disregard state law limitations on damages recovery. And that is essentially what this court has been doing, and what we would ask the court to continue to do here is to read Minnesota Statute 573 as identifying the party, but not providing necessarily a limitation on the damages recoverable. Now, the district court went even further and said there's no conflict even if the damages recovered by the trustee are limited to the damages under 573.02. But this court doesn't have to go that far. This court can leave the issue of damages to another day, and as we have discussed in the cited materials, District of Minnesota courts have permitted trustees to seek the exact type of damages that plaintiff is claiming here. Briefly, I would just like to say, in addition,
could you address this point that was raised by the appellant, that the city has been on both sides of the question about what damages can be recovered? You say, well, you were just seeking guidance, but you were taking a legal position. So I'm wondering, what is your view on the proper what damages are available, and what's the principled basis for the position?
Well, Your Honor, in that case, that was a motion to show cause brought as part, along with a summary judgment motion, essentially to understand the district court in that case's view on who had the proper standing at that point to bring those claims. It was in that case exactly that the trustee was permitted to seek pre-death pain and suffering. So I definitely don't think...
But that was over the city's objection, as I understand it, or no?
Honestly, Your Honor, I don't think that's in the record, and I was not directly involved in that case, so I don't know at that point. But obviously, we would abide by the court's order on that. And if this court wants me to take a position that we will not object to the plaintiff here seeking pre-death pain and suffering, that's fine. We'll do that. We're not seeking people to stop being stopped from recovering under these statutes. We're simply saying Minnesota...
What is the basis for recovering the pre-death pain and suffering damages?
It would be Section 1983, Your Honor.
You think it's a question of federal law?
Yes, and I believe that is how it has been dealt with in the other cases in front of this court. In front of
this court, or in front of these district courts that you've cited?
Well, I would say this court, the decisions that we cited before this court included, I guess those were mostly coming up on summary judgment, so damages hadn't completely been fleshed out. However, those were still at play, the damages in those cases for pre-death pain and suffering. The only cases I have where damages was a final issue, I haven't found any appellate level decisions on that, but in the district court, those have been permitted to be recovered under Minnesota Statute 573.02. And plaintiff too, I mean, I understand he takes issue with the city's position on this, but he too has been on both sides of this issue. When he filed this complaint the second time, he said that the trustee had standing to recover pre-death pain and suffering. That was in his complaint. That was dismissed based on lack of proof that he was the trustee, and it's at that point that he took a different tack and received his appointment as special administrator. So the city will obviously abide by whatever guidance is given to it by the court. We now have the guidance of the Crawford decision, and we do not seek to prevent Mr. Goulet from recovering pre-death pain and suffering damages in this case, and would not object. We will object on the merits, but should it come to a motion as to what damages are available, I can represent to this court. We would not oppose that being given to the jury should this case ever make it that far. Briefly, I do want to mention that there is an alternative basis for this court to affirm and that is on the merits. Before the district court, the parties cross-moved for summary judgment, and both parties agreed that there were no outstanding fact issues with regards to liability. Both parties did put in their brief on that, initial brief on that issue, and as the cases I have submitted to this court state, that is an appropriate alternative.
Fully briefed the qualified immunity question?
Pardon me?
Was qualified immunity fully addressed below and briefed?
Well, I believe that the plaintiff chose not to address that in his opening summary judgment brief. However, and the court need not go here. I'm just saying it's within the court's discretion to reach this issue, should it so choose, because the plaintiff has had the opportunity in briefing before this court to address it as well. And the cases I have cited have found the court will sometimes consider such alternate bases for affirmance.
In that Crawford case, what was the court's rationale for allowing the damages that you cite here in your brief? You just say when the matter was submitted to the jury, the court did not limit the damages, but I gather there's no opinion on that?
That is my understanding, Your Honor, is that what we have cited in our brief is the jury instructions, which clearly lay out the pre-death pain and suffering damages. I do not know, as I stand here today, if there was a separate written order from the court on that issue.
What's your understanding of why they would be allowed? Is it because the federal law requires it? 1983 requires the court to allow more damages than what the Minnesota statute allows?
I think that has been the practice. I think it's an open question as to whether or not it is actually required by federal law, as the district court found. However, the city's position before the district court, and a position we're still very comfortable with, is that that's fine if those damages are submitted by a trustee to the jury.
You sure that's the city's position, even if they're not authorized by law? Or are you saying, you seem to be saying you're not sure whether the law requires that these damages be permitted, but the city's willing to pay them anyway?
Well,
that seems like an odd position. I don't know if the taxpayers would endorse it. So I'm just wondering if that's really based in the law.
What I'm saying, Your Honor, is that as a practice, these damages have been going to juries. And now that the issue has come up more directly in front of the appellate setting, and we have a district court order saying they're not required, I think as to whether or not they're required is an open question, but the city is comfortable with this court saving that issue for another day or weighing in and saying that the practice that has been followed up until now is in accordance with federal and state law. I would ask on behalf of the city and Officer Garbish that this court affirm the dismissal of plaintiff's claims, and thank you very much.
Mr. Lederman, your rebuttal.
A couple things that I want to mention, Your Honors. First of all, it's clear that the pre-death pain and suffering damages are not available under state law. The city may take a different position, but the bottom line is that the law is clear, the statute is clear. Those damages are not recoverable under Minnesota state law.
What was your basis in alleging when you filed the trustee complaint that they were available?
Because they're available under 1983, Your Honor. Under federal law, they are available.
So you're saying 1983 requires them to be available,
yes,
even if the state law doesn't allow
yes.
them. And the city seems to be saying they acquiesce in that position.
That appears to be the case, but that didn't appear to be.
Does that solve any problem about requiring the trustee to be the party?
No, Your Honor, and the reason for that is because even if Mr. Abdi was appointed the trustee in this lawsuit, not on the prior lawsuits, but in this case, where he's only seeking pre-death pain and suffering damages, the question is, what would he be allowed to pursue under Minnesota state law? And the answer is nothing. There is nothing left for the heirs and next of kin. There is no authority under Minnesota state law for him to be able to, as a trustee, to recover these pre-death pain and suffering damages. These damages do not belong.
You just said they're available under 1983, and this would be a 1983 case.
Yes, But they belong to the estate, Your Honor, not to the next of kin. And a trustee only acts on behalf of the next of kin. And that's why, even if he was appointed, he would still have no authority to recover anything in this case. I want to mention something else before I run out of time. We've cited three specific statutes where the Minnesota legislature has made exceptions for cases that where death claims are allowed to survive. Those are cited in the briefing and in the supplemental letter. Each of those statutes goes back and allows the personal representative of the estate to recover damages and not the trustee. I'm out of time, so thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lederman. The court wishes to thank both counsel for your argument that you've provided to the court this morning, the briefing you've submitted. We'll take your case under advisement.